Poetry on the Radio. Poetry in and around the ACT. Today, Arresting Voices. Poets who make you both sit and think, and sit up and take notice. Plus, The Rhyming Bugle. News about poetry around Canberra. I'm Peter Searles. Some poets lead you to sit and think, some to sit up and take notice, and some both. Today on Poetry on the Radio, two of those arresting voices. We start with award-winning poet Martin Espada. He appeared via video link at Canberra's 2022 Poetry on the Move Festival. He's introduced here by the festival's director and co-host of Art Sounds Poetry on the Radio, Kimberly K. Williams.
Martin Espada has published more than 20 books as a poet, editor, essayist, and translator. His latest book of poems, called Floaters, won the 2021 National Book Award. It was also a finalist for the Los Angeles Times Book Prize. He has been widely anthologized, and his work has been performed. His book of essays and poems, Zapata's Disciple, was banned in Tucson, Arizona, as part of the Mexican-American Studies program, outlawed by the state of Arizona. He is a former tenant lawyer in Greater Boston and is now professor of English at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and it's a great honor to have him here with us today.
Thank you. I'm going to jump right in, and I'm going to read from my collection, Floaters, that received the National Book Award here in the United States at the end of last year. And I'm going to start off with the title poem, a poem that concerns itself with an international issue. That's the issue of migration and the dangers of migration in the present day. The story behind the poem is simply this. Two Salvadoran migrants, father and daughter, who came to be known simply as Oscar and Valeria, drowned crossing the Rio Grande in June of 2019, attempting entry into the United States. A photograph of their bodies went viral, sparking outrage, sparking grief, but also sparking what has come to be known in this country as trutherism, skepticism. There was a post in the I'm 1015 Border Patrol Facebook group charging that this photograph had been faked, doctored. The poem speaks to this photograph and to these charges. Floaters takes its title from the term used by many members of the United States Border Patrol to describe those who drown crossing over. And there's an epigraph. Floaters. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and ask, have y'all ever seen floaters this clean? I'm not trying to be an ass, but I have never seen floaters like this. Could this be another edited photo? We've all seen the Dems and liberal parties do some pretty sick things. Anonymous post, I'm 1015 Border Patrol Facebook group. Like a beer bottle thrown into the river by a boy too drunk to cry. Like the shard of a styrofoam cup drained of coffee brown as the river. Like the plank of a fishing boat broken in half by the river. The dead float. And the dead have a name. Floaters, say the men of the Border Patrol, keeping watch all night by the river. Hearts pumping coffee as they say the word floaters. Soft is a bubble. Hard is a shoe as it nudges the body. To see if it breathes, to see if it moans, to see if it sits up and speaks. And the dead have names, a feast day parade of names, names that dress all in red, names that twirl skirts, names that blow whistles, names that shake rattles, names that sing in praise of the saints. Say, Oscar, Alberto, Martinez, Ramirez, say, Angie, Valeria, Martinez, Avalos. See how they rise off the tongue, the calling of bird to bird somewhere in the trees above our heads, trilling in the dark heart of the leaves. Say what we know of them now, they are dead. Oscar slapped dough for pizza with oven-blistered fingers. Daughter Valeria sang, banging a toy guitar. He slipped free of the apron he wore in the blast of the oven, sold the motorcycle he would kick till it sputtered to life, counted off pesos for the journey across the river, and the last of his 25 years, and the last of her 23 months. There is another name that beats its wings in the heart of the trees. Say, Tanya, Vanessa, Avalos, Oscar's wife and Valeria's mother, the witness stumbling along the river. Now their names rise off her tongue. Say, Oscar y Valeria. He swam from Matamoros across to Brownsville, the glur slung around his neck, stood her in the weeds on the Texas side of the river, swore to return with her mother in hand, turning his back as fathers do who later say, I turned around and she was gone. In the time it takes for a bird to hop from branch to branch, Valeria jumped in the river after her father. Maybe he called out her name as he swept her up from the river. Maybe the river drowned out his voice as the water swept them away. Tanya called out the names of the saints, but the saints drowsed in the stupor of birds in the dark, their cages covered with blankets. The men on patrol would never hear their pleas for asylum, watching for floaters, hearts pumping coffee all night on the Texas side of the river. No one, they say, had ever seen floaters this clean. Oscar's black shirt yanked up to the armpits, Valeria's arms slung around her father's neck. Even after the light left her eyes, both face down in the weeds back on the Mexican side of the river. Another edited photo. See how her head disappears in his shirt, the waterlogged diaper bunched in her pants, the blue of the blue cans. The radio warned us about the crisis actors we see at one school shooting after another. The man called Oscar will breathe, sit up, speak, tug the black shirt over his head, shower off the mud, and shake hands with the photographer. Yet, the floaters did not float on the Rio Grande like Olympians showing off the backstroke, nor did their souls float up to Dallas, land of rumored jobs and a president shot in the head as he waved from his motorcade. No bubbles rose from their breath in the mud, light as the iridescent circles of soap that would fascinate a two-year-old. And the dead still have names. Names that sing in praise of the saints. Names that flower in blossoms of white, a cortege of names dressed all in black, trailing the coffins to the cemetery. Carved their names in headlines and gravestones they would never know in the kitchens of this cacophonous world. Enter their names in the book of names. Say, Oscar Alberto Martinez Ramirez. Say, Angie Valeria Martinez Avalos. Bury them in a corner of the cemetery named for the sainted Archbishop of the Poor, shot in the heart saying Mass, bullets bought by the taxes I paid when I worked as a bouncer and fractured my hand 40 years ago, and bumper stickers read, El Salvador is Spanish for Vietnam. When the last bubble of breath escapes the body, may the men who speak of floaters, who have never seen floaters this clean, float through the clouds to the heavens, where they paddle the air as they wait for the saint who flips through the keys in his ring like a drowsy janitor, till he fingers the key that turns the lock and shuts the gate on their babble-tongued faces, and they plunge back to earth, a shower of hailstones pelting the river, the Mexican side of the river. I do believe that times of hate call for poems of love. So I'm going to read one of a series of love poems in the middle of the book. It is actually a sonnet that I read at my wedding. It's called Love is a Luminous Insect at the Window for Lauren Maria Espada, June 13, 2019. The word love, there it is again, indestructible is an insect. Fly faster with a swatter. Mosquito darting through the net. How the word love chirps in every song. Crickets keeping a city boy up all night. I wish I could fry and eat them. How the word love buzzes in sonnet after sonnet. I am the beekeeper who wakes from a nightmare of beehives. To quote Duran, the Panamanian brawler who waved a glove and walked away in the middle of a fight, no mas, no more. Then I see you watching the violinist, his eyes shut, the Russian composer's concerto in his head, white horsehair fraying on the bow, and your face is bright with tears. And there it is again, the word love. Not a fly or a mosquito, not a cricket or a bee, but the lunar moth we saw one night, luminous green wings knocking at the screen on the window as if to say, I have a week to live, let me in. And I do. I want to make sure to read this poem tonight. This is the last poem in my book. My father, Francisco Luis Espada, Frank Espada, was born in the mountain town of Utuado, Puerto Rico, in the year 1930 and died in Pacifica, California in 2014. When Hurricane Maria hit the island of Puerto Rico in the fall of 2017, 5 years ago this week, I saw Utuado everywhere, on television, on the internet, in the headlines. As John Lee Anderson put it in the pages of The New Yorker, Utuado had become a byword for the island's devastation. Approximately 4,000 people died. And now it's happening again with Hurricane Fiona. This is a Category 1 storm, not Category 4. But once again, the island is plunged into darkness, plunged into silence. There's no electricity, no water. I started talking to my father after Hurricane Maria. He had died 3 years before. Actually, I started talking to his ashes in a box on my bookshelf. And that was the genesis of the third and final poem I'll be reading to you tonight. Letter to my father, October 2017. You once said, my reward for this life will be 1,000 pounds of dirt shoveled in my face. You were wrong. You are 7 pounds of ashes in a box, a Puerto Rican flag wrapped around you, next to a red brick from the house in Utuado where you were born, all crammed together on my bookshelf. You taught me there is no God, no life after this life. So I know you're not watching me type this letter over my shoulder. When I was a boy, you were God. I watched from the 7th floor of the projects as you walked down into the street to stop a public execution. A big man caught a small man stealing his car, and everyone in Brooklyn heard the car alarm wail of the condemned. He's killing me. At a word from you, the executioner's hand slipped from the hair of the thief. The kid was high, was all you said when you came back to us. When I was a boy, and you were God, we flew to Puerto Rico. You said, my grandfather was the mayor of Utuado. His name was Buenaventura. That means good fortune. I believed in your grandfather's name. I heard the tree frogs chanting to each other all night. I saw a banana leaf and elephant palm sprouting from the mountain's belly. I gnawed the mango's pit, and the sweet yellow hair stuck between my teeth. I said to you, you came from another planet. How did you do it? You said, every morning, just before I woke up, I saw the mountains. Every morning, I see the mountains, and Utuado, three sisters, all in their 70s, all bedridden, all Pentecostales, who only left the house for church, lay sleeping on mattresses spread across the floor when the hurricane gutted the mountain the way a butcher slices open a dangled pig and a rolling wall of mud buried them, leaving the fourth sister to stagger into the street, screaming like an unheeded prophet about the end of the world. Ayutualo, a man who cultivated a garden of aguacate and carambola, feeding the avocado and star fruit to his nieces from New York, so the trees in his garden beheaded all at once, like the soldiers of a beaten army, and so hanged himself. And Ayutualo, a welder and a handyman, rigged a pulley with a shopping cart to ferry rice and beans across the river where the bridge collapsed, witnessed the cart swaying above so many hands, then raised a sign that told the helicopters, Campamento los Olvidados, Camp of the Forgotten. Los Olvidados wait 7 hours in line for a government meal of Skittles and Vienna sausage, or a tart to cover the bones of a house with no roof as the fungus grows in their skin from sleeping on mattresses drenched the spit of the hurricane. They drink the brown water waiting for microscopic monsters in their bellies to visit plagues upon them. A nurse says, these people are going to have an epidemic. These people are going to die. The president flips rolls of paper towels to a crowd at a church in Guaynabo, Zeus lobbing thunderbolts on the locked ward of his delusions. Down the block, cousin Ricardo, Bernice's boy, says that somebody stole his can of diesel. I heard somebody ask you once if Puerto Rico needed to be free. And you said, tres pulgadas de sangre en la calle, 3 inches of blood in the street. Now, 3 inches of mud flow through the streets of Ayutualo, and troops patrol the town, as if guarding the vein of copper in the ground, as if a shovel digging graves in the backyard might strike the ore below, as if La Brigada swinging machetes to clear the road might remember the last uprising. I know you are not God. I have the proof. 7 pounds of ashes in a box on my bookshelf. Gods do not die. And yet I want you to be God again. Stride from the crowd to seize the president's arm before another roll of paper towels sails away. Thunder Spanish obscenities in his face. Banish him to a roofless rainstorm in Ayutualo so he unravels one soaked sheet after another till there is nothing left but his cardboard heart. I promised myself I would stop talking to you, white box of gray grit. You were deaf even before you died. Hear my promise now. I will take you to the mountains where houses lost like ships at sea rise blue and yellow from the mud. I will open my hands. I will scatter your ashes, Ayutualo. Thank you very much.
Martín Espada at the Poetry on the Move Festival, held at Gorman House in Canberra in September 2022. On one Thursday each month, 3 Canberra-area poets read at Manning Clark House in Forest. Visiting in July 2022 was Judith Nangala Crispin, a Canberra region-based poet and visual artist with a background in music. She spends part of each year living and working with the Indigenous Walpiri people in the Tanami Desert of Northern Australia, and traces her ancestry to the Banaran people of northeastern Victoria and the Riverina, and also to Ghana, Senegal, France, Ireland and Scotland.
I've got a poem called The Dingo Fence, and this poem is dedicated to John Mundine because John Mundine's songlines belong to Dingo. The motorcycle and its travelling shadow are aliens in this flatness. The horizon draws back, becomes a wide flat line. Slate grey ranges breach like submarines, the sky eggshell blue, Monet's clouds. And everything is the road. It bisects the landscape in a straight line, hundreds of kilometres long. When it curves, it does so in a broad, flat arc. At night, the stars detach and become headlights. Vulpecula and Lupus, constellations of the dog, are lights of an approaching road train. By day there's power lines, a wire fence that stretches into nothing. Sometimes tracks of dirt bikes or community cars, figure eights, partly erased by salt, but the road is primary. All forces converge there. Last roadhouse after Elliot. A broken concrete camel lies on its side near a tall cactus and a cage of budgerigars. A tourist approaches in a Pajero with a bullock's skull strapped to the bonnet. He slows, then speeds away. A sign on the bowsers reads, "Closed indefinitely because of the dingoes." White people have been afraid of dingoes since Captain Cook. A dingo can pass for a dog or a wolf, but it's neither. A dingo is a shapeshifter, sometimes a sparrowhawk, an old man meandering down the road, a girl in a red dress. They disguise themselves in mirage, in Fata Morgana, a southern wind, garrulous with finches or heavy owls. When dingoes howl, the whole landscape shakes. Waterfalls appear in stony mountains. Rain fills the dormant creeks. A dingo can pass for a dog or a wolf. It can enter your home as a pet, a rescue, a cattle dog, an abandoned Kelpie cross. A dingo rotates its wrists to open your doors, windows, or locks. It can enter your home with its strange golden eyes and watch you sleep. Dingoes don't care if you typecast them as cowardly, promiscuous, vicious, or cunning. They've heard it all before, and they're still here. Unlike a wolf, a dingo will hold your gaze. Unlike a dog, it holds your gaze for a maximum of 3 seconds. Dingoes do not seek a window to your soul. They see your soul already. A person is a mutated dingo. A dingo's nose is longer than a person's and its head is rounder. White people have been afraid of dingoes since Captain Cook. They built a dingo fence spanning 5,614 kilometres from the Darling Downs to the cliffs of the Nullarbor. In their cowardice and cunning, they built the world's longest fence. No choice, they said. It's the dingoes or the livestock. Dingoes know evil has a scent like rotting metal, like meat and rusting tin, a colonial aroma, the blood libel of sheep eaters. The dingo fence does not keep dingoes out. They run along its length, hunting for a hole, and when they find one, they pass their babies through the fence. Eagles are caught in the wire. Kangaroos, misjudging a jump, hang by their back legs until they die from exposure or shock. Dingoes are hard to kill because of hybrid vigour. They can swivel their heads 180 degrees and look back along their spines. When they hunt, their ears turn like radar dishes. One ear points forward and the other back. A dingo could be tracking you now and you'd never know. When they sleep, they keep one ear against the ground and the other in the air, listening to two worlds at the same time. Dingoes are autonomous. They dig their own homes, follow their own laws, hunt their own foods. They forge strategic alliances with women and bats, diamond doves, bowerbirds and wrens. Dingoes taught women how to hunt. Given the chance, a dingo will poison your dog with orchid venom and take its place. When you speak to a dingo about obedience or puppy training, it hears the word slavery. When you offer a dingo toys, dog collars or soft indoor beds, it hears the word slavery. A dingo is teeth, bones and fur. It will not perform tricks. It does not win ribbons in kennel clubs. No dingo has appeared in a dog's family tree for at least 10,000 years. Dingoes are as old as the last ice age. Unlike pedigree dogs, their lineage did not originate in last century eugenics. A dingo can fake interest in universities, art galleries, politics and God if it must to survive, but it finds this distasteful. It is not a full-blood, half-blood, hybrid, real, purebred dingo dog or authentic. It is not a footnote to your essays on miscegenation. Dingoes have wolf and dog ancestry. If you ask a dingo how it identifies, it will say it's complicated. It does not see itself as the living embodiment of extinction. A dingo is not looking for your validation. If you suggest a dingo should get a DNA test, it will kill and eat you in your suburban dog park. Dingoes have an unbreakable connection to land. Their connection is not a lifestyle choice. The status of dingoes as outcasts is not lost on them. They choose country over kin. They sleep with their bellies to country's skin. When they wake, they offer her their crawling dance. And a dingo does not give a shit what you think about that connection. Sheep eaters have failed to exterminate the dingoes. Their poison baits lay uneaten in the scrub. Dingoes understand traps and strychnine in a way that wolves and dogs do not. They will not be contained by a fence. Dingoes didn't kill the thylacines, but they saw who did. They snarled at the newspaper's obviously fake photographs of thylacines holding chickens in their mouths. The same newspapers that now run pictures of photoshopped dingoes tearing at murdered lambs. Dingoes are marsupial predators. They are not interested in your sheep. In South Australia, the dog fence board administers and maintains the fence. In Queensland, the wild dog barrier fence panel administers and maintains the fence. In New South Wales, the wild dog destruction board administers and maintains the fence. In Northern Territory Aboriginal protected land, the dingoes roam free.
Judith Angala Crispin. We'll hear more of her on future episodes of Poetry on the Radio.
The Rhyming Bugle, poetry news and events around the ACT. Congratulations to Canberra-based poet and essayist Subhash Jairath, who in late September won the 2021 ACT Book of the Year Award for his collection of essays, Spinoza's Overcoat. Moya Pacey's poetry collection, Doggerland, was runner-up, and two other participants in Art Sounds Poetry on the Radio were included on the shortlist, P.S. Cottier for Utterly and Penelope Leyland for Nye. Subhash Jairath won a $10,000 award for his book, which explores the lives of writers in essay form. In engaging such topics as translation, love, mortality, and homage, Jairath takes a broad literary perspective, pushing form and progression of poetics, the judges said. This is first-class cultural criticism in a voice that is daring and rare, moving and lifting. Jairath, whose poetry drew a Canberra Critics Circle Award in 2020, illuminates the work of Franz Kafka, Marina Tsvetaeva, Mikhail Bulgakov, Paul Celan, Hiromi Ito, Dutch philosopher Baruch Spinoza, and other writers. Subhash Jairath was born in India. Between 1969 and 1978, he spent 9 years in Russia studying geology and Russian literature. In 1986, he migrated to Australia. He has published writing in Hindi, English, and Russian. A Catalan translation of his novel After Love from Transit Lounge Press 2012 was published in Spain in 2018, and his play about Anton Chekhov's family was staged at the Street Theatre. Jairath is an adjunct professor at the University of Canberra's Centre for Creative and Cultural Research. Here's advance notice that Sandra Renew and P.S. Cottier will launch their new book V8 from Ginninderra Press on Monday, February 13 at Smith's Alternative. Renew's honours include winning the ACT Writers Notable Awards for Poetry 2021 for her collection Is the Sugar Sugar from Recent Work Press. She also took the 2020 ACT Writing and Publishing Award for Poetry and was shortlisted for the 2020 ACT Book of the Year for her collection Acting Like a Girl, published in 2019 by Recent Work Press. That book reflects on gender, sexuality and coming out in the far north Queensland of the 70s and 80s. P.S. Cottier's book of poetry, Utterly, was shortlisted for the ACT Book of the Year in 2021. In their new book, the two poets reflect on motor vehicles, transportation and roads travelled. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded Ngunnawal country in the studios of Artsound FM. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monaghan. Special thanks to Annika Grant. Poetry on the Radio is heard each Sunday at 4:30 p.m. and again at 10:30 p.m. on Mondays. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. Today's program featured music from the album Absolute Bird, produced by Hollis Taylor and John Rose. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.